announced this morning I'd be preaching to the young people this evening. That means anybody that's under 100. And so if you're here tonight and you're under 100, then these words are for you too. We're going to work our way through the story of David and Goliath. Was it Samson and Goliath, or who was that young people? Samson wasn't with Goliath. Well, it was David with Goliath. Okay. And so we'll look at 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you would, please. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we're just going to kind of preach our way through this story this evening. We're going to read along in the story, and when we come to something that needs a little comment, we'll pause and preach a little bit, and then we'll preach a little bit, and read a little bit, and preach a little bit, and the next thing you know, it'll be time to go home. Amen? And that's a good way to live your life. Preach a little bit, read a little bit, and then it's time to go home. And Nathan, when he was a little kid, went traveling with me one day. We had an evangelist there in the church in St. Louis, and I had arranged for this evangelist to preach in about 4 different Christian schools on one day. And Nathan was our oldest at the time. He might have been 7 or 8, maybe 9, and I let him go along with us. And so as we went along to these different Christian schools, we stopped before the first one and had coffee and donuts. And then Brother Lee went and preached. And then after the preaching was over, we, on the way to the next Christian school chapel, we stopped and had another repast and another snack and another treat. And then we went to another Christian school and did another chapel. And when that chapel was over, then we went and ate lunch. And then we went to another chapel and preached again, and then we stopped and had a snack, you know, and drank a cup of coffee before doing the last one for the day. And Nathan thought that was really a cool thing, you know, preach a while, eat a while, preach a while, eat a while, preach a while, eat a while. And I think that's to this day maybe why he became a preacher, I don't know. But he always had that look about him. Every time I took him on a visit, the ladies, he really slowed me down, because everywhere we went, the ladies would say, "Little boy, are you hungry?" And he would say, "Yes, ma'am." And I'm thinking, "You just ate at the last house." And so here the lady would go and fix him a sandwich or fix him a piece of pie or something like that and give him a glass of milk to drink, and then I'd have to wait for him to eat his snack. And we'd go to the next house, and he'd do it all over again. And anyway, it was kind of interesting, but he grew out of that, I guess. 1 Samuel chapter 17, and I don't really know what to call this tonight, unless you just want to call it David and Goliath. For the young people, I would say maybe the principle of standing alone. Maybe the principle of why you do what you do. You can kind of get out of it what you feel. But for the title's sake, we'll just call it David and Goliath. But there's some lessons to be learned here. The Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shokoth, or Shoko, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoko and Azekah. Now, Azekah, you have to remember, was a Philistine town, and Shoko belonged to Judah, but it may have been oppressed or even invaded by and controlled by the Philistines even at that time. But that place, Azekah, was in Ephes-Damim, or Damim. Verse 2, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side. Now that's important. They stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. Could I tell you, young people, that people have been taking up sides for many, many years. And here we see the Israelites taking up sides, Philistines taking up sides, and this valley indicates that you have to make a decision. You have to decide which side you're going to be on. And it isn't your side. You know, when we get ready to play a game, a lot of times we'll say, okay, let's play a game of softball at our Labor Day picnic. We'll say, let's have a game of softball, and we'll choose up sides, right? We'll choose up sides. So-and-so be captain of one team, so-and-so be a captain of the other team, and we'll see who gets the closest number. I'm going to pick a number between 1 and 25, and you take a guess, and you take a guess, and then I usually whisper in one person's ear, and it's usually either the number 2 or the number 24. I never go to a number in the middle. Always go one where somebody will guess, and then they get first pick. And then we start choosing up sides. Can I tell you, a lot of people think they can live this life and never have to choose a side. But you're going to have to make up your mind on whose side you stand. And it isn't your side, it's God's side. I need not to get God on my side. I need to be on the Lord's side. And so young people, think of that. Could you truly say, the song that Pastor Fox had us sing here a couple weeks ago, we opened up Sunday morning service, I think, with it, who is on the Lord's side? And so I ask you tonight, young people, on whose side are you? Are you on the Lord's side, or are you trying to talk God into being on your side? So that's important. Verse 4, there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. I'm told that's about 9 feet, 4 inches tall. I'd say that's a good deal taller than any guy in here tonight, probably half again as tall as any one man. I stand about 6'1", so this guy would be half my height on top of me. That's a pretty tall guy. And not only that, but he was a pretty massive fellow, you'll see by the armor and the weight of the armor that he carried. So he was 6 cubits in a span and had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. Now, I am told, or I read, that's 156 pounds and 4 ounces. Now, I finally have squeaked under 200 on the scale. I went to the doctor Friday to be recertified on some blood pressure medicine, and they always weigh me, and I squeaked in under 200 pounds. I was pretty pleased. I plan to keep it that way. And think about that, 156 pounds of armor, I could barely move. Think of that, 156 pounds of armor, and that doesn't count the ounces. Well, he had greaves of brass, verse 6, upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of the spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. Now, as I did the arithmetic on this, I discovered that this spearhead weighed 18 pounds and 12 ounces, almost 19 pounds. That's just the spear's head. And they said that the shaft of the spear was like a weaver's beam. This was one big spear. Verse 8, and he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine? And ye, servants of Saul, choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then ye shall be our servants and serve us. What he's proposing here is that you pick your best man and we'll pick our best man, which is me, and we'll have a fight. There's no need of both armies fighting. Let's just let the two champions of each army fight, and whoever wins, then the whole army wins. And how does that sound to you? The trouble was, the Israelites had nobody who could compete with Goliath. You know who the tallest guy in Israel's army was? Anybody remember? It was King Saul himself. He stood head and shoulders above all the other men. So who should have been the guy saying, I'll take up that challenge, I'll come fight you? Who should have said that? Should have been King Saul. He was the king after all. He was the one who supposedly cared about the other soldiers in his army. It should have been King Saul that said, hey, if somebody's got to go fight this giant, that should be me. I'm the biggest guy here. I'm the most skilled warrior, and I'll go take care of it. But even Saul was afraid. Everybody was afraid. Nobody wanted to go fight him. Verse 10, and the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight. Now, that word defy is an interesting word. In the Hebrew, it's a word that means to pull off, meaning to pull the cover off something. It means to expose, in this case, to expose by blasphemy. What the giant was doing when he defied the armies of Israel is he was exposing their cowardice. He was exposing the fact that they had not one man who would come out and face him in battle. And so he defied them. He defied the armies of Israel that we may fight. that they give me a man that we may fight together. Now, really, if you defy the armies of God, in the end, who are you really defying? You're defying the Lord God. So that's a person whose reputation was really at stake here. Could I tell you, young people, that lots of time in life, it's not your reputation that's at stake, it's the Lord's reputation that's at stake. And we need to learn the difference. A lot of us would fight to protect our own reputation, but we wouldn't pay much of a price to protect the Lord's reputation. You know what? A lot of us would lay back and let somebody else do it. And that's what Saul was doing. I'm going to encourage you this evening, young people, to stand up for Jesus. I'm going to encourage you to take your stand for Him. When you make your decision as to which side of the valley you're going to stand on, I'm hoping you won't stand with the Philistines who represent the world, but I'm hoping you'll stand with the Israelites who represent the people of God. And I'm hoping that you'll be one of those people who will be upset when the name of God is defied. I'm hoping you'll be one of those people. And so we move on. Verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Saul was dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, we're going to, meanwhile, back at the ranch, we're going to change scenes for a minute. Look in verse 12. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had eight sons. And the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. Now, what does that mean? He went among men. He went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. That means for an old guy, he was really respected. And people look up to him. He was a man with reputation. He was a man whose character had been proven time and again. And he went among men. That is, among men, other men respected who this man was. And so the three eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to battle. And the names of the three sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the next unto him, Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. So of the eight boys, who was the youngest? David was, right? You see that, young people? And so David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. Now, what happens when the three eldest go off to battle? What happens to the youngest? Do you think he might have to step up and assume some responsibility that he might not have had before? Do you think maybe he had to step up and take care of a few sheep that maybe someone else had taken care of previously? And so David is the youngest, and they make a point out of this that David stepped up, David became responsible. He was the youngest, but the oldest were gone, and so David had to step up and take some responsibility. Verse 15, David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. Now remember, David had already been up to Saul and played the harp for him. That happened in a previous chapter. So David returns from that now and feeds his father's sheep. You know, it's really hard to go back to feeding sheep when you've played a harp for a king. It's hard to go back to those humble surroundings of watching sheep on a Judean hillside when you've been in the king's chambers and you have played a harp for the king. It's really hard to go back. But David went back and he did what he was supposed to do. He fed those sheep. Verse 16, the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Morning and evening, this guy came out and made that same charge. What was that? Choose you a man for you and let him come to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then we shall be your servants, or then you shall be our servants and serve us. And David said, or the Philistine said, I defy the armies of God this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. 40 days, morning and night, he made this same outrageous, blasphemous remark. Verse 17, and Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000 and look how thy brethren fare and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines. Look at verse 20. And David rose up early in the morning. Is there something special about getting up early in the morning? It seems to me like Joshua got up early in the morning. Moses got up early in the morning. David got up early in the morning. The Lord Jesus got up while other men still slept and walked with God. Do you suppose there's something magical about rising early in the morning? I don't know that that one thing by itself is magical, but it does seem like men of God have learned that you walk with men or walk with God while other men sleep, and then you walk with men. That's what Jesus did. He walked with men during the daytime, and he walked with God at night. He was really always walking with the Lord. But, you know, during the daytime, he would witness and teach and preach and perform miracles. But at night, he would seclude himself and talk with God. And he would rise up early in the morning. There is something about walking with God that is better done early in the morning. And we see David was one of those who learned to get up early. How many sleepyheads do we have here? Don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to raise your hand. God knows who the sleepyheads are. You know, I tell you what, I was a sleepyhead when I was a kid. And boy, now I'd love to be a sleepyhead. But you know, I've hit that age in my life, Tom, where it's tough to get more than 4 hours sleep at a time. And I even laid down, take a nap this afternoon. Never could go to sleep. Got back up, did some other stuff. We need to rise above that, because a lot of times when you're sleeping is when you ought to be praying. And so David rose up early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight, and shouted for the battle. And Israel and the Philistines put the battle in array, army against army. And so just as David arrives, get this picture, just as he arrives, the army of Israel goes storming down the hill, yelling like a bunch of crazy men. Ah! And they've got their swords and their spears, and they're making the attack, and the Philistines are attacking. Notice verse 22, David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. This is evidently after they've clashed and they're on their way back to camp. As he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. Now, what were those words? Choose you a man of you, and let him come down to me. If we be able to fight with me and kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight. So David hears that. This is the first time David has heard it. He heard the same words. Look at verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. The men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel has he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. All of that, by the way, is real good stuff. If anybody can kill this guy, it's like winning the lottery. He's going to be really taken care of by the king. Verse 26, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? Now, do you see a difference between David and these other soldiers? The other soldiers are thinking, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? Well, his father's house will be free in Israel. And the king will give him his daughter to wife. That'd be pretty cool to be the king's son-in-law. And he'll make him rich. And that's why I should go out and battle the Philistine, right? No, David's not thinking that at all. David is thinking this. We need to take away the reproach from Israel. This man has brought reproach upon our nation, but mostly upon our God. He's brought reproach. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Who is he that he should defy the armies of the living God? Who does he think he is? David is not considering the fact that this guy is twice as tall as he is. He's not considering the fact that the guy's armor weighs more than David does. By the way, I didn't tell you this. I told you that the weight of the of the 5,000 shekels of brass was 156 pound, but another commentator figured up and totaled everything from the helmet down to the spear and all of the equipment that giant was carrying into battle that day, 272 pounds and 13 ounces of equipment. That's more than most of the soldiers of Israel weighed. That was one big guy, 272 pounds. Do we have anybody? No, we won't go there. So think of this. David is not concerned about getting rich. He's not concerned about getting a wife. He's not concerned about his father's house being free. He's concerned about the reproach of the name of God being lifted. And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." And Eliab, the eldest brother, this is David's big brother, when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. So Eliab is overhearing David talk to the men. He's overhearing the men say, well, the guy that kills him is going to get rich. He's going to get one of the king's daughters to wife, and his father's house will be free. And David's saying, really, what will be done? Somebody needs to take away the reproach. Who does this guy think he is? And Eliab says he's angry with David. His anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? Notice what Eliab said. This sounds like any older brother I've ever known talking to his younger brother. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart. How many of you have an older brother and you can imagine him saying that? Yeah. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. You know, for 20 years or more, I worked with the volunteer fire department. And many times we would back up the rescue squad at a bad vehicle accident. And one of my pet peeves was the people who were slowing down trying to get a look, to see if they could see somebody with half their head tore off or half their arm tore off. People would slow down, and they're going really slow. And here's the police officer trying to wave them on through, and they're slowing down, and you can tell they're not paying attention to the police officer. They're trying to look and see what they can see. Oh, I wanted so bad to just open up the hose and pour it right in their window. I know the naughtiness of their heart. They wanted to see blood. They wanted to see who was hurt. They wanted to see if somebody was missing an arm or a leg or an eye or an ear. They were wanting to see the wreck. Oh, my goodness. How did anybody live through that? I bet nobody lived through that. That's the naughtiness of their heart. And that's what Eliab was accusing David of. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down to see that thou mightest see the battle. Could I ask you, young people, are there times that you have a naughty heart? Are there times that you have a proud heart? Are there times that you're in places you shouldn't be, just out of curiosity, and yet your heart would convict you and tell you this is not really good. You shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be doing this. I think we all have times where we have a proud and a naughty heart, do we not? And we need to let the Lord convict us of that right here at this moment. But now look at verse 29. And David says, what have I done? Is there not a cause? Now, David is thinking of a cause, all right, but the cause is not getting rich. The cause is not marrying the king's daughter. And the cause is not seeing his father's house free in Israel. All of those things would be nice, but the thing that David's concerning about, the cause that he's concerning, is the name of the Lord that has been blasphemed by this giant. Verse 30. And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So Saul now, it's been repeated to Saul, there's a young man here that said such and such, and here's what he said. And Saul said, bring him to me. And so Saul sent for him. Verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, for thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Now, I'm told that David was somewhere between probably 17 and 20. He was not an old guy. He was not a young teenage boy either. He was old enough to know what to do as far as fighting went, but he was certainly not a seasoned veteran soldier. But he said, you know, I'm willing to go. Let no man's heart fail because of him. Why were men's hearts failing? For what? Four-letter word begins with F. Men were afraid, weren't they? They were failing for fear. Their hearts were failing for fear. But he says, thy servant will go and fight this Philistine. Now that's a pretty radical thing for a young man to say when you're looking at a guy that's 9 feet, 4 inches tall and encompassed with 272 pounds of armor. The weight of the head on his spear is 18 pounds. And here's a young guy that has no armor and no battle training, and he says, I will go fight him. Now, I think there's a couple of things there that we could learn, young people. One is, you want to be careful what you volunteer for before you figured out what the whole score is. You want to count the cost. Remember that Jesus said in the New Testament, no man goes off to build a tower unless he counts his money to see that he has enough to finish. No man starts a war unless he counts his soldiers and the soldiers that the enemy have and makes sure that you can win. You want to count the cost. But there are times that the cost is not really important. There are times that the principle is important enough that no matter what the cost, this has to be done. And so I want to caution you, don't all the time be, I will go until you figured out what is going on. But by the same token, when you figured out what is going on and you figure out that the Lord's name is being blasphemed, somebody needs to stand up and do something. And so we see David saying, I will go, thy servant will go and fight this Philistine. Verse 33, and David said to, or Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Since he was your age, he's been fighting in battles. He's bigger than you are. He's older than you are. He's more experienced than you are. He's meaner than you are. He's uglier than you are. He's got better equipment than you have, and you're wanting to go fight him. Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight him. And David said, verse 34, David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. David says, you know, this lion or this bear, I'm not sure what he was talking about. There were two episodes, evidently. But on one episode, he relieved the lamb and received the lamb out of this villainous beast's mouth. And he thought he had him dead, but he wasn't dead. And he rose up after he gets the lamb away from him. The animal raises up against him, and he said, and I grabbed him by the beard. I'm thinking that bears don't have beards. It must have been the lion. But I grabbed him by the beard, and I smote him and slew him. Verse 36, thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. Now there's a principle here, young people. You don't take on big battles in life until you've learned how to win the small battles. Fighting a lion and a bear, that's pretty difficult, but it's not like fighting a giant. Who, you know, a lot of guys, I thought about this one time, a lot of guys go deer hunting. How many guys have been deer hunting before and you've been deer hunting? You know, deer hunting would be an entirely different sport if they armed the deer and they shot back. Wouldn't it be? How many would be so quick to go deer hunting if you knew every deer had a gun and he knew how to use it? I don't know about you. I'd probably stay home. but think about this. Before David took on the giant, he had already killed a lion. He had already killed a bear. He had some practice. He had done some rehearsing. He had an experience with the Lord. He knew the Lord would bless him. You know who David knew killed the lion? It wasn't him that killed it. It was the Lord that gave him strength to kill it. It was the Lord who delivered the lion into his hand. It was the Lord that delivered the bear into his hand. And David had learned, I don't win any battles by myself. Any battle that I win, God helped me to win it. And you know what? That's the importance of the small battles in life. the lions and the bears of life, the importance of them is one day I'm going to have to fight a giant, and I'd better know what God will do when I get in the battle. I'd better know that God will hear my prayers and that God will answer me and that God will look out for me and that God will care for me. So I want you to understand here, there's a principle. You don't start with the biggest battles in life. You start with smaller battles and work your way up. And you learn by experience what the Lord will do. Look at verse 37. David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me," do you see who delivered him? "The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the paw of the Philistine." The paw is in the Hebrew there. "And Saul said unto David, go and the Lord be with thee." Saul appears to be persuaded. Okay, all right, you've convinced me. I'll let you go. Go and the Lord be with thee. Verse 38, "And Saul armed David with his armor and put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword, that is Saul's sword, upon his armor," that is upon Saul's armor, "and he essayed to go," for he had not proved it. The word "essayed" there means he started to go and then he stopped. So he's got all this armor on. Whose armor is it? He's got on Saul's armor. Now Saul was taller than any other man, so Saul's armor would have been big for a teenage boy. And so he's got on Saul's armor, he's got Saul's sword, and he starts out the door and he says, "This is not a good idea. I can barely walk in this stuff." And so he turned around and he said, "You know what? I haven't proved this. I've never practiced with it. I haven't worked with it. I haven't fought with it. I don't know anything about using this armor. I haven't proved it. I'm not going to go with it." Middle of verse 30, "And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off." Could I say this? David was tempted to take ungodly advice. Now think about this. Saul tells him, "You can go to the battle. Use my armor." And here Saul's wanting to tell David how to fight the battle that he himself is unwilling to fight. Is that a good idea, to take advice from somebody that won't even get in the battle himself? Saul won't go fight the man. Saul has run like everybody else has run. And Saul's the biggest guy in the army. And yet he won't go fight. And so when David persuades him, "Look, God delivered a bear into my hand, he delivered a lion into my hand, and he'll deliver this giant into my hand. Let me go fight him." And Saul says, "Okay, go ahead, but let me tell you how to do it." Can I tell you, young people, be careful the advice that you take in this life. There's always people trying to tell you how to live their life, but before you take their advice, you better look and see how their advice has worked in their own life. A lot of times people are really willing to give advice who have not done so well themselves. And so you need to be careful and say, "You know what, if I'm going to learn how to pray, you know what, I think I want to find a guy who's really proven that he knows how to pray. I'm going to learn how to pray from him. I'm not going to let some guy tell me how to pray who's never really proved that he's a prayer warrior." That makes sense to you? I want to learn how to witness, but I'm not going to go to a guy who talks about witnessing. I'm going to go to a guy who knows how to witness, and he has witnessed, and he's seen people saved. That's the guy I'm going to talk to. And when it comes to beating temptation, I'm not going to go ask a guy how to have victory over temptation who's failed in every temptation he's ever faced. I'm going to go to a guy who's lived a clean, pure life and who's stayed clear from sin and who's stayed separate from the world. That's the guy I want to talk to. I want to talk to the guy whose advice I know really works because it's worked for him. David proves to us here a lot of wisdom for a young man. Verse 40, "So he took his staff in his hand." That was the staff that he led the sheep with. That's pretty cool, isn't it? His staff. Now, they tell me that these staves were hooked on one end because they had to have if a little sheep fell over a cliff, they had to have a way that they could reach down and hook him. So they were hooked on one end, but these staffs had multi-purposes. They served as a walking stick. As you walked along and you climbed an elevation, they served as a walking stick. Sometimes they could be used as a chastening rod if the little lamb was straying, he might get swatted on the backside because he strayed. And so, and sometimes they would even take the rod and break the little sheep's front leg so he wouldn't wander away. The rod had many purposes. So David takes this staff with him in his hand. Notice and chose him five smooth stones. Why do you think the stones were smooth? So they would fly straight. And so he picks five smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now, I've got to tell you this about David and his sling. You don't just pick up a sling one day and go out to battle against a giant. You don't pick up a sling one day and go out to battle against a bear or a lion. You pick up a sling one day and try to knock a tin can off a shelf somewhere. You have to practice, and you have to practice, and you have to practice. How do you think it was that David ever got to where he could play his harp in the presence of the king? Do you think one day he just picked up that harp and said, "Prum, hey, I think I can play this. Prum, and hey, this is pretty cool. Look at this. Isn't this beautiful?" And you think he did that? No, I think David probably had an instructor, and I think he probably practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced, and he did that with the harp, and he did that with the sling. He did it with the harp until he was sufficiently skilled to play in the presence of the king of the land, and he did it with the sling until he was confident in battle that I can hit the giant right in the forehead. It takes practice. And you know what practice is? Bottom line, work. Work. Learning to play the piano is hard. You know where greatness is? Used to tell my kids when they would go to a recital and they'd hit a wrong note one time. How many of you ever played in a recital? All of you have played in a recital. How many of you ever hit a wrong note in a recital? Okay. Miss Heidi, have you hit a wrong note? Okay, she didn't have her hand up. I want to make sure. I thought she might have been impeccable here. And you know, I used to tell Naomi and Levi, because they were the two that carried on with the piano lessons and became really proficient with the piano. I used to tell them when they would always pick too hard of songs. And I'd say, you know, for a recital, you ought to pick an easier song, something that you can nail and master every time. I don't think it's a bad idea to really pick a challenging song, but I wouldn't want to play it for a recital. But they would always pick the hardest song that they could think of. And then they would go into the recital just barely, where they could just barely play it, and then they would hit a wrong note or two or three or maybe a half a dozen. But here's what I told them. You will never embarrass me in a recital if you have really practiced. Anybody can get nerved up. How many of you ever got nerved up before playing? You get nerved up. You know what? That's a pretty common thing. You know why we get nerved up? Here's why. We forget that we're playing for an audience of one. And we begin playing for an audience of 100. And we get worried about what the 100 think. What are they going to think of me? What if I goof up? Oh, they're going to think that little boy goofed up or that little girl goofed up. Oh, they can't play. What are they going to think of me if I goof up? You know what? Forget the 99 or the 100 that are there and play for an audience of one. And you'll find that your nerves will do a lot better. They'll do a lot better. But I want you to see here that David is ready to go out now and meet this Philistine because he's practiced. He's practiced. Does he know what he can do with that sling? I think he knows what he can do with it. I think he knows exactly what he can hit and exactly how far away he can hit from. Why? Because he's worked and he's worked and he's practiced and he's practiced. And I'm telling you, this is the biggest audition of his life so far. This is the biggest recital of his life. And so he goes out to meet this giant. He drew near to the Philistine. Look at verse 41. The Philistine came and drew near to David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. That is, he scoffed at him. He made fun of him. He laughed at him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. Now, this giant probably had warts on his warts. He probably had hairs grown out of the warts on his nose. The giant was probably uglier than a dead stump. But David was a handsome, ruddy. He had a good complexion, and he had a good countenance. And this giant is probably jealous and envious of his youth and of his good looks. And what does he do? He mocks him. Can I tell you, young people, that if you try to stand for God, the world is not going to applaud you. It'll mock you almost every time. So don't be surprised when the world mocks you. This old giant represents the world. And the world does not like young people who are trying to live for God. And they'll mock you and call you names. And you know what? The better countenance you have, the more they'll mock you. And the more they'll disdain you. He disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, look what he said. Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? Who knows what a stave is? A stave is a rock, a round stone. Am I a dog that you come out here with a handful of rocks? What, are you going to throw rocks at me and you think I'm going to run away like a dog runs? Huh? Have you ever thrown a rock at a dog? Anybody ever thrown a rock at a dog? Don't ever get caught throwing a rock at a dog. Don't ever let the neighbors see you throw a rock at their dog to get him out of your yard. But he said, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves, with these stones? And get this, the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Now, you have to know this. The gods that this man worshipped were idols. They were really non-existent. And yet the scripture tells us in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul tells us that every one of those pagan idol statues had a demon behind it. But this guy curses David by his gods. Did that scare David off? Did that frighten David? Well, notice, and verse 44, and the Philistine said unto David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh to the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. What a blowhard. What a braggart. What a boaster. What an arrogant, proud guy this is. Come to me, and I'll kill you, and I'll chew you up in little pieces. You know, the world will try and intimidate you. They'll try to scare you, and they'll try to make you think that if you stand up for Jesus, they're going to eat you alive. They'll try to make you think that. But I want you to see what David did. David turned right around, verse 45. And then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. That's my weaponry. You have a sword and a spear and a shield, but I'm going to tell you what, I have the God of Israel. And then he goes ahead and he says, this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth. Why? That all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the young people read that next line, for the battle is what? The battle is the Lord's. The battle is the Lord's. And he will give you into our hands. Could you say that with me, young people? The battle is the Lord's. Say it again. The battle is the Lord's. One more time. The battle is the Lord's. Let's do it again. The battle is the Lord's. Could I tell you, whenever you get tempted, what should you say? The battle is the Lord's. What if the world makes fun of you? The battle is the Lord's. What if some guy is telling a lie about you and embarrassing you? The battle is the Lord's. You know, the biggest mistake we'll ever make is thinking the battle's mine. It's really not. The battle's the Lord's. He's the one that gives victory. And we need to learn how to walk with him and have that victory. Look in verse 48. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Yeah, I think that's the last thing in the world that giant expected. Could I tell you, somebody said that, you know, old lions get to where they lose their teeth and they can't hunt anymore. How many of you knew that? Old lions can't hunt anymore. So you know what they do? The lions work together in a, what do you call the family of the lions? Anybody know? It's a pride. Okay, so the lions and the pride work together. And so they put the old lion down here, downwind, out of the way, and all of the young lions go up here to the other end, and they roar and roar and roar, and they make this hideous noise. Roar! Roar! And they roar. And you know what the game does? The game runs from the roar right into whose paws? The old lion. The old lion's waiting on him. You know, the devil likes to roar. And the last thing he's expecting is for you to put on the armor of God and run right at him. That's what David did. Here the old Goliath is, roar! Who do you think you are coming out here with stones to throw at me? You think I'm a dog? I'm going to cut you up. I'm going to bite your little pinhead off and eat it. That's what I'm going to do. And the giant is trying to intimidate David. He's trying to scare David. And what does David do? He goes running right at him. I think that's pretty cool. He ran to the roar. He ran to his fear. Could I tell you, young people, we need to learn how to face our fears. Lots of people in this life have gotten in trouble because they keep running from their fears. And God wants us to learn how to face our fears and beat them head on. And so David runs toward this giant. He ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk in his forehead and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling, with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, and there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine. Can you get this? He crawled up on him and stood on him. Here's a guy 9 feet, 4 inches tall. Now he's laying down. Now he's 9 feet, 4 inches long. Okay? And he's laying down, and David runs and crawls right up on top of him and stands right up on top of him. Is that a victor stance or not? And so here the giant is down. David runs, and he stands upon him. And you know what he did? Look in verse 51. There was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew out the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. They fled. You see, that's what the giant had offered in the first place. The giant... Was the giant telling the truth when he said, look, we'll fight. You give us a guy, and I'll be the Philistine champion. You get an Israelite champion, and the two champions will fight. And if your champion beats me, then we'll serve you. Isn't that what he said? Was that true? Did the Philistines lay down their weapons and say, okay, you guys won. We're your servants. Is that what they said? No, they fled. They fled to fight another day. They were afraid today. They didn't want anything to do with David, and they fled today. But don't kid yourself. They were regathering their troops, but they were not ready to lay down their weapons. The giant was a big liar. Did you know that the world is a big liar too? I'm using the giant to kind of represent the world. The world says, look, you just give a little bit, and we'll give a little bit, and we'll all get along. You give in a little here, and we'll give in a little here. And can I tell you, the world is lying to you. They never mean to give anything. Some of you girls are going to grow up and want to get married one of these days. I know you can't believe it right now. But you're going to grow up and want to get married one of these days, and some guy will come along from the world who is not a Christian. He didn't live like a Christian. He didn't talk like a Christian. He didn't walk like a Christian. He didn't smell like a Christian. He's not a Christian. But he'll say, well, look, I really think you're a cool girl, and I want to marry you. And if you'll marry me, I promise you I'll change. Now, how many of you believe that? Now, you know what? What needs to be said is, you do your changing now, big boy. Because this is never going to happen unless you change first. If God saves you and regenerates you and makes you a new creature in such a way that all the world can see that God's done a work in your life, then I might consider that. But you know what? We're not going to have one of these, you give a little and I'll give a little things. Am I making sense, young people? You don't trust the world. They'll lie to you every time, just like this giant lied. So when they saw their champion was dead, they fled. Verse 52, and the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines. Could I tell you, when one man is courageous, it gives courage to the whole army? If one time you'll stand, I'll guarantee you God will raise up others to stand with you. But somebody's got to be first. Somebody's got to stand first. Somebody's got to take the lead. Somebody's going to say, I'm going to stand up for Jesus. If nobody stands up, I'm standing up for Jesus. And in this particular case, the other guys took courage and they chased after those Philistines. The children of Israel, look in verse 53, the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. But he put his armor, that is the giant's armor, in his tent. David said, I'm going to take the head of the giant. Now, why was that important? Because taking the head of the giant to the king was an act not only of victory, but it was an act of yielding to the authority of the king. You know what David was doing? David was saying, I'm not taking credit for killing this rascal. I'm not taking the credit for that. I'm going to bring his head to the king and turn it over to lawful authorities. And he recognized authority in so doing that. But he said, I'm going to keep his armor. That's a little trophy of battle there, but he kept his armor, put it in his tent. Look at verse 55. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell. Now that's one of the funniest passages in Scripture to me, because just a chapter or two earlier, David was there in the king's court playing his harp, in soothing the king's wicked spirit. And he doesn't even remember who he is. Can I say to you, young people, if you stand up for God, you may not ever be famous, and lots of people may not ever know who you are. But it doesn't really matter. All that really matters is that he knows who I am. That's all that really matters. And David didn't really care. The king didn't know. He really didn't care. The king said, inquire thou whose son the stripling is. And David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine. Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said unto him, whose son art thou, thou young man? And David answered, I'm the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Do you see the humility here? I'm just the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who was known, by the way, as a shepherd. I'm just a shepherd's son. That's all I am. Can I tell you, young people, that you may never be anything but a shepherd's son, a truck driver's son, a factory laborer's son? It doesn't matter. What? It doesn't matter if the world knows who I am. It doesn't matter if the giants of this world system know who I am. What matters is that Jesus knows who I am. That's what really matters.